Access number 28674, Mr. Richard Causbrook, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Causbrook?
I was born in Twickenham, Tower Road, Twickenham, on the 3rd of October 1919.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background?
Yes. Mum, going back to just before my parents married, I think my mother had been left behind when her family went to Australia in about 1907. And it would appear that she by then had met my father and had either become engaged or very nearly so. So when her parents and the rest of the family, quite a number of them, took off to Australia in about 1907, she was abandoned, and I rather think that she was living with the Creeds at 13 Tower Road, Twickenham. And that presumably was where my father found her. So when they married, they moved in as lodgers to 13 Tower Road, Twickenham. And a couple of years later, they had me. Dad had been away at the First War.
What did he do in the First World War?
He was...
Don't know.
He was a soldier, and upstairs I have his rifle sling as a belt for a very thin man. But that's all I know. He was obviously an infantryman. That's all I know.
Now, what did he do for a living generally?
He was a civil servant. He was a civil servant. He was, when I achieved consciousness, he was in the Ministry of Labour, going round labour exchanges. I rather suspect a bit of a hatchet job at the time. I sort of knew what he was doing. This was in the 20s, because he was doing means test work, going round hammering the poor. The sort of level of job he was. I used to go with him on trips. I remember trips to, it's silly how you remember just details, Pitsea, on a train, presumably from Liverpool Street. It might have been Fenchurch Street, and in a saloon coach. But he was a civil servant, and remained so.
Did your work at all?
Yeah, mother at the time, back at the time of the war, First War, she was working in what we now would call British Telecom, the post office, and apparently was quite an adept telegraphist, and she worked at Battersea, and went to work from Twickenham on the train. Mainly because she used to reel off the stations on the Windsor branch with Gaia Plom.
And as you were growing up as a child, the family were reasonably well off. I mean, not rich or wealthy.
Debatable point. I think it would summarise it to say Dad was never very good with money. Tracing the progress of, I think he was also too much bigger for his boots than he deserved to be, and he had high aspirations because he took me out of the state school system and put me into a prep school at Twickenham.
Well, tell me about your education. Tell me about your education generally, then.
Well, I mean, this is part of my dad's character. You see, I mean, he was aspirations mad, but could never really afford it. But he continued as a civil servant in the Ministry of Labour. We were not rich, but we were apparently quite well off, quite reasonably off for the time.
And what about your education? Take me through.
Well, now, as I said, Dad had aspirations, and it appears to have coincided with his coming into money, because about the time, about the time his father died in 1929, I found myself being sent to the MAL, which was a preparatory school in Twickenham, and from where I got a scholarship to Merchant Taylors. That was in 1932. Merchant Taylors was at that time in the city. And as a result of Merchant Taylors moving to Rickmansworth, Dad, I think, again, due to some acquired money, because he got some acquired money, bought a house in Ryslip. As I say, his aspirations were always a little bit more than he could afford. But
tell me about what Merchant Taylors School was like at the time. What type of an education did you get there from 1932?
Well, I looking back on it, it was a very good education. The fact that the school, it was good. I got, they took me right through to what was then higher school certificates, which was A-levels, perfectly adequate. Presumably gave me enough, inverted commas, qualifications to carry me on further into life. The fact that the school really assumed that you were wealthy, really wealthy, and that you could afford lots of things. You could afford to go to university irrespective of your family income. And I sort of burnt out, I imagine, or ran out of steam at about what would now be A-levels, and failed to get the scholarship to university, and was more or less left stranded. Now, that was my criticism of that education. Because if they had said, look, if you're not going to university, you ought to be doing something else. We ought to get you into a trainee job at the gasworks. And there was a fellow who left, and he left at lower sixth level and went to work for the gasworks, because he'd gone as what would be a management trainee in these modern terms. So I'm not happy with I was happy with the education I got. I was not happy with the way I was left at the end of it, with no future.
So what subjects did you concentrate in towards the end of your time?
Science, physics, chemistry, maths, no languages, I don't think. I don't think I ever got anything other than school certificate, O-levels in languages, Latin or Greek.
So that was your main interest, was it?
It was science. Well, that was, obviously that's where that, the other interest at school was, must say this because of the ministry, the military attachment, was the OTC. I did very well in the OTC.
Well, tell me about your OTC training, as much as you can. What did you actually have to do in the OTC?
Well, you just became, you played very practical soldiers. You dressed up as a soldier in pre-First World War uniform, because they didn't give you the modern uniform, but you dressed up as a soldier and you went on schemes and you did drill, you went on camps, and you became a junior infantryman. And I became, as high as I could get in it, I was an under officer.
And did you do your Certificate A then?
Yeah. I've forgotten that, yes. And somewhere around is a mug that, I won for winning the platoon competition as a sergeant. So you have coming through, of course, the fact that I was very, I liked it. I liked the OTC and would have liked to have gone into the army before the war.
Now, anything else about school? What about sport? Was that important?
Oh, I've just found, I was looking for these yesterday, and I found, not particularly, played, I was sort of second 15 rugby, and I found two certificates when I was looking for these photographs, for winning, becoming third in a couple of athletics. I think it was 440 or 880 or something. Not particularly important, but one was interested and one enjoyed it up to a point.
Now, so you went to Merchant Taylors in the City of London and then at Rickmansworth, did you say?
And then it moved to Rickmansworth.
And how long were you there for? When did you finish at the school? When you were
18? 1938. Well, that makes me 18, 19, doesn't it? Early 38.
Now, just stepping back a little, any other hobbies outside of school, you know, because you were a day boy, weren't you? So you, I mean, what
a day boy, radio. Radio, I mean, the only one I remember is radio. Building radio sets, playing with radio sets, taking them out into the fields and making them work.
Now, what had caused that interest? I mean,
again, a rather silly story, I suppose, because in my first term at Merchant Taylors, for whatever reason, they had a class auction sale. And somebody put in the auction a crystal, for a crystal set. And I bought it for sixpence. And I built a crystal set round it, with Dad's help, because Dad had been building... Dad's in the 20s, built radios. You didn't necessarily afford to buy one. You bought the bits or scratched the bits together and made one. So it was there was some skill in the family. I started from there. And that started me into radio and took me on eventually, of course, to retirement. But that's a longer story.
And at this scale, you're just building receivers. You weren't doing any transmitting.
No, never got round. No, that cost money, you see. Transmitters had to have a license and take a test and rather more expensive stuff. You couldn't do it out of junk.
Any other hobbies?
A limited interest in railways. I say limited because as a younger child, I had quite a railway collection. So I had been interested in the late 20s, very early 30s in railways. I had quite a decent Hornby collection. Because I had pictures of the, Cuffley Castle. That was the first of the castle class. A sort of marginal interest in railways.
You weren't in the Boy Scouts, Boys Brigade?
Not in the Boy Scouts, and I very carefully skated round, not altogether successfully, the Christian Union.
What was the Christian Union?
Well, I suppose you'd call them happy, clappy Christians. The revivalist, not the revivalist, what is it? The enthusiastic...
evangelicals.
Yeah, evangelical lot. And it used to be... I mean, I reckon it was this is libel. It could be a cover-up for a lot of other sinful goings-on, but I never saw it that way. I mean, looking back, I'm suspicious. But it was an evangelical lot who met and praised God for saving them, and I hope I'm not offending you.
And what did you went along to this? Your parents wanted you to go.
I think somebody said you'd have to go along. You ought to go along and see what it's all about. It was a thing in the 30s, the late 30s, but it never got me very far. I never went very far with it, and scuttled out of it as soon as I found a girlfriend. I think
you weren't particularly religious by nature.
No, never.
Now, no interest in photography at this stage, because we're going to.
I must have done. I must have had some interest in photography because I had acquired a 3¼, 2¼ plate camera via my father, and I was processing some plates in the school darkroom when the science master came in and opened the bloody door and fogged the plates. So that's detailed memory saying I must have been interested in photography at that point. Dad was slightly interested too, so I was following him.
And it was very much this business of you had the camera, you took the pictures, and then you developed it yourself.
That was photography to a lot of people in those days.
So what happens next then? It's 1938, right. The year before the war, and you're a bit left in shtuck.
I've been left in shtuck because the school had prepared one, and this is a criticism of the. I mean, it's not a criticism of private education. It's a criticism of the way it's operated for me and in other connections within the family, which I won't go into. Because you didn't get a scholarship to Oxford or Cambridge, and your parents couldn't send you there, or couldn't buy you into some county firm or God knows what, you were stranded. I was stranded. I left school, and I got two brilliant A levels, and I went all of what do I went got a job with a photographic company across the road here. Incidentally,
in
Borehamwood. Incidentally, Dufay making colour film, and I worked with them before.
Now, is this a film manufacturer's or is it an actual photography shop?
It was a manufacturer. It was what we had here. Was the marketing and lab research labs for Dufay Color, Dufay Chromex, who were exploiting the Dufay Color system, which was a color color photographic system, which used a color screen integral with the film. There was, I've almost laid my hands on some, but it was the colour screen was a lenticular screen, and you took your photograph through it, and it became integral with the transparency. So you could hold it up to the light, just like you hold up Agfa Colour and up Fuji Colour these days. And I was in the labs, went to work in the labs.
So you were a laboratory assistant?
Yes, whatever you'd call it.
So what were you actually doing? Tell us a bit about your working day there, just to get an idea of what you're doing.
I can only remember the bits I can remember. First job I did was to make colour prints via a process of wash off what we call the carbon process. In that way, you made three separation negatives. Somebody had made three separation negatives, which you exposed onto three different coloured pieces of gelatine stuff, which you then washed out and stuck together, superimposed them, and they gave you a colour print. And the first job I did was to make those. And my old school tie, which I must have been wearing at the time, still has on it some of the gelatine off that process. And that was the first job I did. And I worked on colour processes. And as a sort of complete, during the first year, because 1938 I went to work with them, well, we were having a war in 39. I was sent over to our labs in Thames Ditton. I was living in Ruislip at the time, by the way. I didn't move here till after the war. I was sent over to the labs in Thames Ditton to do some work on a colour. Obviously, I knew what I was doing, sort of, colour process. And who was working there but the son of the Freeze Green, whose pictures have been on the telly this week and last week. He was a funny chap. He was obviously put in. He wasn't much good, but just a sort of strange closing of the loops.
Was the Freeze Green photographer, was that using the same process?
No. Claude's Freeze Green process was much earlier than Dufay, and to some extent quite a clever one. If you are in up with it, but it's a very clever process considering it needed practically no modification to the projector, not much, and also could use ordinary film and a modified camera. The Dufay process took, as I say, took the pictures through a colour screen, which is a bit like that. You've got light coming up behind, you've got the picture coming up behind the screen
in a
television set in white light, potentially white light. The three phosphors, the green, blue, and the red, green, and blue, make the picture.
So you're doing that, and you're working. Did you enjoy working there?
Had a happy time. Yes.
Now, were you aware? You were there till the outbreak of war, presumably.
I was there. We were certainly. Yes, I was there from. In round terms, everything happened in May or June. May 1938. And I was there from May 1938 to May 1940, when I joined up. But we'll come back to that.
Now, what about the outbreak of war? What was, that's the next thing. You weren't in the TA at all, were you?
Nope. No.
Now, had you considered, before we got the outbreak, had you considered joining the TA?
I had considered going back a little bit further. I had considered joining the army, taking a commission in the army, or trying for a commission in the army while I was at school, but it was blatantly obvious there was no family money to support it. And so, because I was so keen on the OTC, I did not consider, mainly I think because it wasn't placed, the means were not placed in my way. I remember no publicity for the TA, nobody coming around and saying, join the TA. I'd have probably joined.
Now, what about the outbreak? Do you remember, in this words, the old joke, the day war broke out? What were you doing? What do you remember of how?
I don't remember precisely what we were doing. I think I remember the old Chamberlain on the radio, but I don't really remember much more than how well war's broken out. I remember the day before the war broke out.
Now why?
Were down filling sandbags down somewhere near Ruislip Church. You know, one of these little facets of memory. The day before war broke out, which would be the Saturday, we were filling sandbags down by Ruislip.
Tell me about that. Who'd organise it? Who was doing it? What for?
I don't know. We had gone down, that's the family, the mum, my father and myself, and I expect my girlfriend had gone down to fill sandbags. That's all. That's all I can fix in my memory, where we were doing.
Now, what effects did the war have on you? I know you joined up in May 40, but there's nearly a year, seven or eight months. How did the war affect life for you?
Apart from the blackout description.
Well, tell us about that. Well, how did the blackout? How did you do your own house?
I don't remember. I seriously don't remember. I don't remember. I don't remember. I mean, we must have done it. We must have, like everybody else, prepared for it. But I do not remember the detail. No, I don't believe it. Did not seem to make an awful lot of difference apart from the obvious restrictions, the blackout. You had to put a funny light thing on. You couldn't have your bicycle lamps light. But in many ways, it didn't make. I mean, I don't remember life being all that more difficult. You used to go out. You used to go to the cinema. Because don't forget, the first few days, God knows what's going to happen. Nothing did, so everybody relaxed.
Now, what about the air raid precautions? Did you have an air raid shelter either in your garden or nearby?
No, I don't remember any formal or informal air raid precautions in our part of Ruislip, King's College Road.
So what happens next then?
Well, the day war broke out, or precisely the day after, of course, because it was a Sunday the day war broke out. There had been some suggestion that people with technical qualifications would be useful to the war effort, the war that was going to be effort. So on the day war, on the Monday, I trotted round somewhere to a tin hut somewhere round the corner, because in Boreham Wood, and registered as a person of scientific and technical ability that might be useful to the war effort. Fairly soon, in other words, within a few weeks, I was summoned to interview at, I believe, the War Office.
Now, what was this interview? Tell us about it.
Well, when you remember the odd bits. You went into a room and there were what appeared to be a lot of quite the ancient army officers, some almost like dormice in the Alice in Wonderland, sort of sitting around a table. And the interview sort of asked me what I wanted to do, what I was done, what I was doing. And the conversation went, I had must have revealed that I had wanted, I would have liked at some point to have joined the army, taken a commission in the army. And the conversation went like, what arm of the service would you have liked to have taken a commission in? I said the Royal Artillery, because they had horses and I liked the uniform. I didn't say that, but that was the reason. And he said, would you like a commission in the Royal Artillery? And I said, yes. Now, all this was in October 1939. Go home. I think one duly then enlisted in the army and was sent on indefinite leave. I think they went through the procedure of being enlisted. They went home and nothing happened. You waited and you waited. Until late, early on in 1940, I suppose in about March, April, letter from the War Office saying, sorry, Royal Artillery, in other words, Royal Artillery is full up. Would you like a commission in the Royal Signals? I wrote back and said yes. And eventually in May, when was Dunkirk? Well,
back into May, early June.
Day before Dunkirk, or about the week before Dunkirk, was asked to, told to report to Catterick, to the training, one of the training battalions of the Royal Signals, and there we are.
Now, you hadn't objected to that it was going to be the Royal Signals. You didn't mind that at all.
Oh no, because it was wireless. I mean, it wasn't horses and posh uniform. It was wireless. Well, it threatened to be wireless anyway.
Now, so what happens next then? What happens? You travel down in back end of May to.
I go to Catterick. Out to Catterick.
What's the name of the unit you're joining?
Excuse me. Oh. It doesn't say. It was the 1st Operator Training Battalion, Royal Signals, Le Cateau Lines. Le Cateau, well, you should know that from the First World War.
I know that, yeah.
Catterick. And,
was this just a general training? What
they formed in this. It just happened to be the Operator Training Battalion, who had been selected or told to incorporate an OCTU squad. This is this thing as the OCTU squad. In other words, they'd take in a group of fellas who had been selected for training for commission, and to give them their basic training. Okay, it's a bit like the first few the first few weeks at Sandhurst, I suppose.
The rest of the battalion were general.
The rest of the operating battalion were going to be operators. And you always knew this because when you went into the canteen at any meal time, there would be. I can't do it. Everybody was rattling their knives and forks in Morse code.